First of all, you don't know me.
We're all about that high school drama girl, all about them high school queens. We'll take you for a ride in our comic girl,
drama girl,
cheering for the right team.
Drama queens, drama queens,
the smart girl, rough girl, fashion, but you're tough girl. You could sit with us, girl.
Drama queens, drama queens, drama queens. Drama, drama queens, drama queens.
Okay, we
I just was sorry, I just almost fell out of this f***ing chair. Well, you know what, that's a good way to kick off the episode.
That is the appropriate reaction. Guys, wow. We have just been on an emotional roller coaster, the three of us. There are things we learned about our show for the first time. There were cringes and cries and revelations, honestly, in episode 12. Crash course in polite conversation. It was a crash, all right. This show aired originally on February 3rd, 2004. Ooh, we were into winter shooting, and my God, it was cold.
Oh, yeah.
And this one, if you recall, is about after the last episode where Larry comes home and Peyton gets time with her dad. In this one, she receives the devastating news that her dad is lost at sea, and she and Lucas take a trip to Hilton Head, South Carolina, to identify a body that has washed ashore, which turns into an overnight, and oh, goodness. If that wasn't enough drama, Nathan's grandparents come to town, don't know Deb and Dan are separated, and secrets start to be spilled.
Woo! Grandma and Grandpa coming to town was a revelation for me.
Majorly, we learned things we did not know.
Majorly, pardon the pun, because we had Major Dad Gerald McCraney.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even know. I set it up and I didn't even know.
Okay, wait, I have to say how excited I was because I was a huge Major Dad fan and he was married to Delta Burke and I was a big Designing Women fan.
Oh,
and
yes.
Gerald McCraney was like a household name in my home growing up. And when they told me, and Tess Harper too, by the way, from Little Girl Lost. Remember that movie, that like Lifetime movie in the 80s that everybody watched?
She is an icon.
Yes.
Yeah.
When they told me Tess Harper and Gerald McCraney were playing Nathan's grandparents and that I got to work, I lost my mind.
Dressed up for dinner?
I was so excited. And the first scene when I got to work with him was the dinner party. And I just remember walking in and like seeing him sitting there at the dinner table waiting for our blocking rehearsal. And I was just speechless. I was so starstruck.
How was it? Like, could he tell that you were geeking out?
I don't know. I mean, he was lovely. Both of them were so, so sweet and smart. And I loved just listening to their ideas on the scene and hearing the way that they spoke up about their thoughts on their characters, even though they were jumping in as a guest star, which, a lot of younger people, when they come in as a guest star, they're scared to have ideas on shows because we're new and we just want to get along with everybody. And seeing the way of a vet like walks into a room and is like, no, I'm taking up space here. You hired me for a reason. I have ideas. Let's talk about them. It was like so baller. So anyway, I just loved them.
I feel like Joy as your friend and Hill, I'm sure you saw this too.
Yes,
there's the shot when Haley walks in with Nathan and sees Royal. And I was like, that's Joy. That is Joy losing her mind that it's Gerald McCraney. That's you.
I want to know like Joy when they announced the blocking and they're like, all right, we're gonna have Haley sit next to Royal. Uh-huh. Like I can just feel like the excitement there. Like, yeah, I can handle that. Of course.
Mom, I'm sitting next to Major Dad. This is so cool.
Also saw Joy, you empowered as an actress a little bit more in this episode through your wardrobe because your outfit at that dinner felt like Haley's had to wear a bunch of goofy shit on this show.
Yeah.
You know? And you came to impress your boyfriend's family. And I'm sure it helped that you were also like game to impress these like totally awesome guest stars.
Yeah.
Do you remember picking that outfit? Because it is like gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. Yeah, it was very sort of, I guess it was kind of 60s, that outfit. I don't remember specifically the fitting, although it does make sense to me that it would have been, it's the first time we see Haley really dressed up for anything.
Your hair was curled.
My hair was curled. She had a little extra makeup on. She really went out of her way. And a vintage vibe on Haley makes a lot of sense. And what I liked about this too, which you were saying that she's, it was empowering as an actress, but I think it was more just that Haley was really getting to, I've been watching her come into her own over the course of the last 12 episodes and seeing that she is trying to figure out who she is, like we all did in high school. And I'm enjoying that journey for her. Like, do I wear weird hats? Is that who I am? Do I get dressed up in vintage vibes? Like, is this who I am? You know, just experimenting with all that fun stuff that you do in high school. I think Haley really gets to, because clearly Peyton and Lucas in this storyline are doing all the grown-up stuff, like all the scandalous grown-up stuff. And I think throughout at least the beginning of the show, the first couple of seasons, Haley definitely gets to be sort of the stereotypical high school girl that people can relate to in that way.
We do get to live vicariously through Haley. Whereas, like, Brooke knows who she is. Like, Brooke is wearing juicy suits from A to Z.
Yeah.
You know?
She's solid. Yeah.
Figured it out. Okay. It didn't even register with me until you just said episode 12. Like, if this was a show that was on air today, this would be the end of the season.
Oh, yeah.
Like, nobody goes past 12 episodes, really, anymore. So this would be the cliffhanger where everyone's like, wah, 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 what's going to happen?
Yeah.
So the fact that we're only halfway through season one.
Can you believe? 22 episodes. It's so many shows.
I mean, and guys, we went on in later seasons to do 23 and 24. I mean, we did full years of shooting. It was so wild. And God, yeah, I just remember... You know, our whole storyline before you guys go on your road trip, Hill, revolved around us, you know, fixing up your dad's old car. God, and I remember when they pulled the cover off that thing. I'm such a gearhead. And I was like, oh, my God, what's happening? I was so excited. And then I had to be like, you can fix the starter, right? Like, act like such a ding dong. But I loved seeing that. Because I had such a sense memory of how cold we were.
Yeah.
And I remember those nights out with that Corvette and you and I huddled in the car under down jackets trying to get warm before they'd take them away. And we'd have to just like be in our t-shirts.
Winter in Wilmington. What an introduction.
We thought like it's the South. It's the South. Surely it will be 90 degrees all year long. wrong. No. It is so wet and so cold in the winter because that wind chill is brutal.
Yeah. I mean, you're from Virginia, Hill, and I was Texas and New Jersey, but Texas being the South in the winter, I knew that it was going to be cold, and I'm sure you did too from Virginia, but because it was a coastal town and we were on the water, it was a different kind of cold.
Like all the scenes where you can see our love handles. Right?
Yeah.
I remain so, I'm like, can I get a coat that covers my ass? Like all my body heat goes out through my back and my butt. And I just remember like that constant fight of, can I get a coat that covers my ass?
Please, a jacket. Please, please, please. Yeah.
So, okay. I want to talk about my first question in this episode was, why do you think Brooke so casually backed out and let Peyton and Lucas go on this road trip, and not just let, but like volunteered, like, hey, you two go ahead and go without any reservation or concern. Or I was like, wow.
I mean, again, I think it's a device. Like we talked about how earlier in the season, Brooke was made a device for conflict at the party.
Yeah.
In this episode, this road trip is the device. But I think what I liked about it, because I'd been clamoring for, you know, her motivation, who she really is, why does she behave the way she behaves? And I think after the last episode where she says, this is what I think is happening. I think he's basically dating us both. And Peyton says, no, you need to trust yourself. He picked you and I love you. I think she's really trying to lean into that. I think she's trying to trust her best friend. And I think she's trying to trust her boyfriend. And I think as we're getting to learn her motivations, she's learning about herself too. And I remember thinking, well, as we watched it, it's such a moment of self-awareness to say, I'm really not good in a crisis. And it, you know, essentially if it's your dad, I'm going to lose it and you're going to have to take care of me. And that's completely inappropriate.
Right. Wow.
You know, I was like, wow. Like,
yeah,
I loved that she was willing to admit that and be honest about her fear and say, like, the thing I'm going to be really good at is sitting here and answering the phone and holding it down. Like, I trust you guys. And it,
that's awesome.
And I think knowing what was coming, I had to lean into it extra because we knew that the whole point was we'd get to a betrayal.
It pains me to see how inclusive Brooke is in this episode. It's like, oh, we're going to be on a date together. Like, let's spend some quality time together fixing Peyton's dad's car. You know, like, let's go to Peyton's house. Let's check up on her. Let's, you know, like, she got the memo that Peyton was feeling weird. She misinterpreted it as like, oh, you're feeling like a third wheel. Let me just overcompensate, which is so noble and so sweet and so endearing. And like, did we not watch these episodes when we filmed them? I guess not.
Guys, I don't think so. Because look, I mean, if you look at the episode, look how many nights we were shooting.
Yeah.
We weren't home when these episodes were airing, so we wouldn't see them.
Your TiVo. No. We had TiVo, but I would honestly
What were you, rich?
I didn't want to go home and watch the show. I wanted to go home and watch I Love Lucy or like whatever the new thing was that was on, you know, some big fancy show. I was sick of us because I was with us all day.
But all these years later, I'm not sick of us. Now
no, more,
I love
more,
us.
More.
Now I can't get enough of us.
No, but it's. I think we all had these moments in this episode where we were like, wait, what?
Oh, yeah. I mean, revelatory stuff.
We all missed the Dan Scott memo. Oh. So let's address. So Danny, when they call, when his mom shows up calling him Danny, at the beginning of this episode, and it's Danny's birthday. And then Gerald McRaney comes in and checks on Karen. Like, these are all things that I don't remember. Like, him checking up on Karen is indicative of something really, I don't know, subversive going on for the last, you know, how old are the kids? 16 years old?
Yeah. Yeah, it made me wonder, like, has he been helping to pay for Lucas's future? Has he been, I mean, why is he in touch with Karen? And he said it's an old friend. And he said it sincerely. So it wasn't like he was, it wasn't ominous. It was like they actually are in touch. But that makes sense for some narcissistic patriarch to be like trying to puppet things and pulling strings in all directions too.
Well, and I wondered in that moment, because Dan and Karen were together in high school.
Yes.
So Dan would have been living with Royal. Mm-hmm. Like, what kind of a relationship Royal had with Karen? Was he mad at Dan for leaving Karen? Did he feel like his son slighted this girl? It launched me into 1,000 questions.
Well, he's also like a great looking man. And sometimes great looking men just like to be adored. And so it makes sense that he would sit next to cute little Haley in her cute little sweater at dinner. It makes sense that he was probably on friendly terms with Karen when she was the cute little girl in a cute little sweater. You know, there is that nostalgia that certain people carry because he married his cute little wife who probably wore a cute little sweater once. And so those kinds of patterns of I don't know, machismo makes sense.
Yeah.
I also, I don't know that he, I was just thinking about what you were saying about him being there when Karen and Dan were together. And I don't know that he would have supported their relationship. I think it, but I could see his character encouraging Dan to break up with her, but then feeling guilty about it. And so like making up for it by staying in touch with Karen and trying to pay for Lucas in some way or something. I don't know. Did we ever solve this mystery? Does it come up in future episodes?
I don't know.
I don't remember.
I guess we're going to have to watch.
I don't know.
I am realizing though in this moment where I'm like, oh man, this is a place where Brooke and I are really actually so similar that I didn't see then. But you being like, it's so sweet and noble. She's trying to include her. And I'm like, do you think he would have been so mad at his son for being a bad guy? And I'm like, God damn it. This is why. This is why I've gotten myself into so much trouble, because I'm like, no, it has to be the best version of the situation. Everybody's being nice. And
you are an eternal optimist, Sophia. That is real life. Just oh no, his intentions are totally pure.
No, this person's being sweet. Damn it.
It's striking that they cast someone that looks enough like Barbara. So, you know, Tess and Barbara have a very similar style in this show. Yeah. And it makes sense that when faced with a choice, Danny goes with the girl that looks like his mom, especially if he's trying to win his dad's approval.
And similar personalities, too. I mean, if you slap a Southern accent on Barb, you've got there's a pretty similar vibe going on there. Tough lady.
Yeah, it's true. It was also a very cool choice, I think, on the part of both our hair and makeup departments and wardrobe to style them in the same way. The morning after the big dinner, they're both in the kitchen wearing these like eggplant purple shirts.
Do we think it was on purpose, though?
Honestly,
do we think purpose, or do you think, remember, we had such limited resources in season one?
We had limited resources, but guys, I remember all the way back to the beginning, there were very conscious conversations about the colors that people were put in. I wore a lot of black and red and bold colors because Brooke was like a bad girl. Hill, if you notice, like you were wearing a lot of white and black and that like sage green, and they would always
put a lot
Chad.
Of green.
They'd always put Chad in that blue version of a sage green. I don't know what that's called. It's like a cadet blue or something.
Heather blue.
There it is. And like... So there were all these choices about what the colors that the characters were wearing represented.
And then they put Joy in like every fucking color all at the same time.
Yeah, it was incredible. You were like a color wheel.
Exactly. Every leftover color goes on Joy.
But yeah, I do. I think it was on purpose. And like you said, even when you see them at the dinner party, they kind of blew out Barbara's hair to be a little fuller, like Tess's hair, you know, so that Mrs. Scott Sr. and Mrs. Scott Jr. look very, very alike. I thought that was really smart.
Hey guys, it's Jana Kramer. The iHeartRadio Music Festival is back. Join us for the official iHeartRadio Music Festival pre-show podcast hosted by me, Jana Kramer. It's going to be a blast, and we will have all your favorite celebrities and artists joining, such as Chrissy Metz, Debbie Gibson, Joey McIntyre, Donny Osmond, 98 Degrees, Teddy Mellencamp, and so many more. Get your tickets today at onlocationlive.com. Let's get lucky.
I loved seeing Dan as a teenage boy.
Yeah.
And I really thought Paul did a nice job with making those choices and how quickly he switched from big alpha tough guy into submissive teenage boy as soon as his dad showed up. And even at the dinner table, like when Deb was talking, and he just looked at her and gave her this look with like wide eyes, and then like looked at his parents and like, come on, stop. Don't throw me out of the bus.
My dad's going to see.
So sweet, but really good performance. It was so sharp.
Paul turned in an extraordinary performance in this episode, given that he was also really ill. Yeah. And he got super sick during this episode, during that dinner party, and no one would know. Like, we even forgot because his performance is so strong. And then I was like, wait a second, they had to shoot this scene really weird because Paul had to go to the hospital.
Yeah, something was up.
He's able to focus in a way that's really respectable. And I think that's why they threw in that line at the beginning of the dinner party scene. Did you hear Tess say, you look sick, Danny, which could just be like, oh, your dad's here and you're stressed out. But I also think part of it was coverage because he was like sweating profusely.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. He just used it. That's acting, kids. We're just going to use what we got.
He is a trooper. He is nothing if not professional and, you know, make sure that he can push through. And he's like, refuses to take anyone's pity.
No,
I kind of love that about him.
I know. And because he's such a bear, but he's so tender.
I know.
There's like nothing better than being protected by Paul Johansson.
Oh, yeah.
Wow, this is so lovely. And so in a moment where he needed support, I think it's so sweet that the whole crew and all of you guys who were in that scene really stepped up to make sure you could shoot him out and he could go to the hospital. I mean, because this is the reality of our job. It kind of doesn't matter if you're sick. You've got to get the shots. And that can be really detrimental to people. And so you know, you guys doing the wide shots that included everyone and then doing all of Paul's coverage and then having Jim, who worked in the prop department.
Was it Jim? Was it Craig? Who sat in for him? Do you remember?
I feel like it was Jim Nelson.
I think it was Jim Nelson. And just the thought that, you know, everyone would do that is, yeah. I really think it speaks to the sort of generosity of spirit of our crew.
Yeah, which, it was a family.
Yeah, it was so
special.
By this
point, this was the last episode we shot before Christmas break.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because then we all took off for like 3 weeks or a month and came back and Paul was better. And it was like, oh, thank God. But no one really knew how sick he'd been. It was kind of a revelation when we came back in January, which makes it even more interesting to watch this episode and be like, God,
he just knocked it out. I mean, and even the scenes, obviously the dinner scenes are so A, impressive because of his performance, and B, extra impressive because you know what he was dealing with. But that scene in the dealership when Gerald Royal, Dan's dad, comes in and starts kind of riding him and jabbing at him with his accomplishments in front of the customer, and then, you know, punches him and says, oh, look, you're still fit. You go, oh, my God, this is who Dan is with Nathan. Yeah. And it's who Royal is with Dan. And you realize these relationships have just generationally mirrored. And it's like...
And big revelation for Nathan, too, to be... to experience that in that like real time, to hear that come to light like that.
I wrote this line down, Joy, because it was my favorite line of the episode when Nathan's apologizing that Haley like witnessed all that at the dinner. And Haley says, it's okay. It helped me understand you. Like bearing witness to someone else's mess is the most intimate thing you can do, because without having to discuss it to death, you understand the person so much more. And Haley being the one person that can bear witness to what Nathan's going through is so sweet. I mean, we've all watched each other in real life deal with some like terribly messy things. And I think that's why we're friends 20 years later.
Yeah.
You know?
Haley also had my favorite line of the episode, because Nathan goes, and because she says, you know, now you know the truth. And Nathan goes, yeah, but I just don't know what to do with it. And Haley goes, okay.
Okay.
It was perfect.
It was so funny.
But like, also, how impressive, how good at boundaries she is. She's like, okay, well, good luck with that. I'm going to go do my life now.
She had a curfew, man. She's like, look, my parents are going to start flipping the porch light in like 2 seconds.
No codependence here. Like, she just showed up. She was at the dinner party. Like, oh, his knees are great. You know,
and then amazing.
Like, speaking up, try to like help everybody be fine. And then goes, takes some, you know, he drops her off home. And yeah, well, good luck with your problem. Thank you for allowing me to witness that. And hope that goes well for you. Good night.
Let me know how it works out.
Wow. I mean, is that just like being a part of a really big family that you naturally, I mean, because I am an only child and I have no experience with that. That's so foreign to me that a young woman would be that confident and have those boundaries.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not that person. I'm the one that's like, cool, let's sit here on the porch for 3 hours while you talk it out, you know?
Yep. Totally. Yeah. I know it's 4 a.m. and I have to do something early, but sure. What else do you need?
Yeah. Same. Who knew that we should have been taking lessons from the Haley playbook and setting boundaries for ourselves, girls.
Okay. We all need to get okay tattooed.
And then the kiss here, that killed me, because you go, okay. And then you give him a kiss like on this funny side part of the mouth face. You didn't kiss him. You gave him like a boop, and then you walked away. And I was like, God, it's delicious.
Do you think in this moment that Haley is like, reconsidering? She's like, oh, there's like 3 bad generations of this mess. Like, do I want to be Deb?
I think that's a legitimate question. That's I don't know. I don't think I thought of that in the moment, but if I were Haley now, I certainly would be thinking.
Well, I think as adult women, we can't help but think about that now, because we're old enough that we've looked at our young selves, why we were the way we were, what we carried, what we learned consciously and unconsciously. Like, we can therapize. And now we're like, well, you know, she's looking at this generational inherited bullshit, wondering if she's going to be Deb Scott. And it's like, maybe she wasn't when she was 16, but we are in this moment.
Yeah.
100%. Peyton doesn't have a generational thing to look to. And so I think that is... This episode was really difficult for me because I felt like Peyton had already had to deal with so many of these, like, major traumatic, like, sad things. It's like the whole, you know, my mom is dead and now my best friend's kissing his boy. And, like, every episode it gets bigger and bigger and bigger with the Peyton trauma. And so when I got the script that it was like, my dad is what now? Like, he's... what? I hadn't experienced in real life, like, a major, like, panic-inducing loss like that. Like, my pastor had passed away, you know, and that was someone who I really respected a lot, but it wasn't my dad. And so I was just like, is this just to get me to cry again? Like, I don't know how many times I can do this, because you feel like you're going to run out of ammo or run out of steam if you just do it every single episode.
Yeah.
And so that whole thing was so hard, because in between scenes, Sophia and Chad could be like fun, you know, like you guys could be having fun. And I would have to just like sit in a corner and like eat Altoids and, you know,
and listen to sad like songs.
Menthol and sad songs and try to stay sad.
Oh,
I thought you made a really interesting choice in this episode, actually, as an actor, because you had been doing so many episodes, sullen and depressed and struggling. And that's what was written for you. So that's what you were doing. And in this episode, you leaned into the vulnerability and it softened you. And even though you were sad, it wasn't the kind of sad that we've been watching you do. It was a much softer little girl, vulnerable, warm. It was like really seeing Peyton warm, I think for the first time.
The whole redemption thing. They're like, everyone hates you. We're gonna take away your dad now.
What I thought was so interesting, though, is that in the last episode, I felt like we started to see you that way. There was something so beautiful about Larry, Peyton's dad, coming in.
Yes.
And we got to see you be this little girl.
Yeah.
And really feel her being 16. And what it led me to see or believe was that this girl who's 16, who lives alone, the angst that teenagers experience could also be armor for Peyton. This girl kind of out there alone in the world. And then as soon as her dad came back, she got to soften exactly what Joy's saying. It was so tender and sweet. I remember having a thought during this being like, God, that's why I think they leaned into like Peyton in pain, because the way you played it was so genuine and beautiful. And it made me love you so much. And so I think that they took that moment and really made this new freedom, this new emotional vulnerability, this young girl, they were like, and maybe we'll take it all away. And as an audience member, I mean, I did this episode with you, and watching it now, it wounded me so much, thinking like, please don't hurt this little girl.
That you guys are both being incredibly generous. Thank you. But the thing that's really hard for me in this episode is that, yes, like, we were trying to age Peyton down, right? And show, like, this is a kid. She's just a kid, you know? She's a kid that lives alone. And, like, but then to take it from, like, this is a kid to, now we're going to do some sexy time
bow,
stuff.
Bow, bow.
Girl, make it make sense.
Oh, my God.
Come on now.
Joy, I just almost spit water out of my nose.
It's so ridiculous. We were all like mouths agape just watching this. Like, she finds she goes back to the motel, finds the bracelet. And I couldn't fathom, because I don't remember what was going to happen. So I was like, why are they going back to this motel? I mean, I loved that set. It was a beautiful set, but
beautiful.
I just couldn't figure out, like, for what reason did they make her have the bracelet back in the motel? That seems like such a strange scene choice. Okay, she finds the bracelet. She's sad. Like, oh, all right.
We never see the bracelet again.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, he's taking his shirt off and he's looking at you like, come here, baby.
Yeah.
And it was so gross. It was gross to me.
It started in the fittings because I was just, I was like, what? And they're like, he's going to take your shirt off. And I was like, I don't want to do that. I'm going to keep a tank top on. Right. And they're like, okay, fine. We'll make Chad take his shirt off. You know, for as much complaining as I've done about us having to like get naked, the boys also had to get naked all the time. So, you know, it was fair. But I was like, no, I'm going to wear a tank top. So Chad trying to figure out which layer to grab, because I'm actually wearing three shirts.
Yeah.
So him trying to figure that out was a big pain in the ass. But the way they described it to me to make it make sense still doesn't make any sense to me. I think they knew that Sandra Bullock was my hero. She's always been my hero. We're from Northern Virginia. Like, I remember like reading Good Housekeeping as a kid because she was on the cover. And I was like, yeah. I just love her so much. And I was told that this was like the movie Speed, where you've been through this traumatic thing with someone and there's so much pent up angst that you can't help but fall into each other's arms at the end of it. And as a 21-year-old, I was like, okay, sure. You know, I guess it took a lot of convincing. As an almost 40-year-old, I'm like, bullshit. When I've had a bad day, don't touch me. I've been through something emotional. Yeah, hard pass. I'm Keith Scott, just with like the glass of brown liquor. Just like, no one talk to me. No one touch
me. Also, Speed is like full of adrenaline. Like, of course they're going to, you know, it's like the release of all the adrenaline. That's not the grief of pulling back a sheet on a corpse and thinking it might be your parent.
By the way, even though it's not your parent, you just looked at a dead body. I can't think of anything grosser.
And by the way, this person, Barry, this plot line, was one of your dad's coworkers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Like, hello?
What was happening?
Never acknowledged again.
How long it had been in the water? I mean, it's just so inappropriate on so many levels.
I'm going to call lazy writing on that one. I think they definitely could have done better.
We need Peyton and Lucas to kiss again.
It's time.
How do we make it even crazier than the last time?
But look, you never know what's going on in a writer's room because they could have had a completely different plan. And then you know how sometimes the rewrites would come in or whatever. I don't know if you remember how far in advance you had this, but it's totally possible that they had a different plan and then they got, you know, Gossip Girl did something scandalous, got a bunch of ratings, and then the network called and was like, we need more sex in this episode. And then, you know, somebody was forced to make it up. So, you know, in the defense of some of the writers in the room, you never quite know what's going on or where it's coming from.
And I will say, too, that's a great point, Joy, because a lot of our writers were young. Yeah. A lot of our writers didn't have, you know, tons of experience on other shows. And I think there is something really interesting about even how they explained it to you, Hill. This is not an uncommon device on screen.
No.
Two people have this really intense emotional experience and then they hook up.
It's like why there's slut cops in every TV show. Slut cops is the name of a TV show I want to do, right? Because let's get down to it. So you know this.
Wow.
We're going to catch some bad guys and then I'm going to lick your face. Yeah,
the idea that a woman
processes trauma through her sexuality is not something that I necessarily align with, but maybe some people do, you know?
Well, yeah, everybody has different experiences, expressions, like, sure, I bet we could have a really interesting conversation with some women about this. I'm more in your camp where I'm like, I've had a really bad day. I either want the world's most platonic hug, even if it's from my partner, or I want to be left alone and get under a gravity blanket and literally be like, no, this hugs me and no one else talk to me.
Girl, gravity blanket sounds pleasing.
Oh.
I think, the reason it felt out of place to me is because when I want comfort is when I'm feeling trauma, like I need comfort because something's wrong. But in this episode, everything had kind of just been fixed. Like she, you know, everything was okay now.
Oh, interesting.
So it felt like it just felt like a bad timing to me. It would have made way more sense in the room the night before for her to be crying, for him to be comforting her. She rolls over, like it just happened. A hug, and then it just sort of happens in bed. Like that feels much more of a natural transition rather than like everything's better now.
Well, I think they were trying to do a bait and switch. Like they wanted people to think it was going to happen that night. And then it didn't. And then it's like, okay, we're in the clear. And then it was like supposed to be a sneak attack. I think this episode was really well written for all the Dan Scott stuff.
Yes.
And sure. I think, you know, like Peyton constantly being faced with trauma is like a hard line to walk, but okay, we're walking it and yeah. we're getting through it. Some people are cursed. She's a cursed human. It's just the let's make her younger to then have her do some like much older stuff yeah. and shoot it in a way that is kind of graphic. You know, it's not graphic for cable, but if these were real life 16-year-olds playing these parts, you couldn't do that.
Yeah, no way.
It'd be very, very frowned upon. So it just feels weird that people want to see pretend 16-year-olds get down. I don't want to see 16-year-olds aren't sexy, man.
I know. My favorite part of that was when your hair got stuck on his necklace. That was like, that's real.
How can we awkward this up? I leaned into the awkward of that for sure.
Oh, but that was great. And I will, I don't know, thinking about it, I get the device. It does work. The point is that there is a connection between these people and that figuring out, you know, love and relationships at 16 is really messy. And there was no reason you had to pull your clothes off. You could have just been making out.
That's bad enough, right?
Yeah. It's bad enough.
For high school.
It's that, you know, we've talked about it multiple times. I'm sure that's what initially came in. And they're like, let's turn it up to 11. There's always that, like, let's add a Brooke pervert comment. Let's, you know, we're going to put Haley in a hat and then we're going to turn Peyton up to 11.
Everyone, we have news.
Hi, we're doing a virtual event in September in honor of One Tree Hill
Day.
Yes,
we are. Yeah, baby. 9/23. Everyone in the OTH fam knows it's our favorite day. And this event is also going to benefit one of our favorite groups. Us ladies are raising money for Kind Campaign because they do incredible work in schools to end bullying. And honestly, our Tree Hill High School needed that.
Yes, ma'am. For sure. Yes, ma'am.
So there is a lot of information forthcoming, but check out loopedlive.com. They have everything right there, and more info will be added soon. So we can't wait to see you guys.
See you on OTH Day.
The Drama Queens are coming to you live from the iconic Beverly Hilton Hotel. That's loopedlive.com for tickets.
Do you guys remember when you're first in high school and you're starting to make out with boys and stuff, do you remember how awkward it was though? And how like you didn't know what to, you were trying to kind of copy the things you saw in the movie and shows like ours. And, but you know, it always felt so, I mean, gosh, I remember one of my first French kisses. I think it was my first French kiss. It was this really rich boy in our neighborhood. I was kind of like the poor girl from the wrong side of the tracks. Like my house is across the street from the highway and like directly, you know, and, but there was this boy in my neighborhood that lived in, Upper Saddle River, which is like, you know, within walking distance of where I was in Waldwick, New Jersey. And,
you're making it sound like Pretty in Pink. Like you're Andy.
Well, he took me on a date to the Bubble Lounge, and I was 17. He took me to the Bubble Lounge in Manhattan. He had a car that drove us there. Like they had a driver. Sorry, I'm going way off. But anyway, that was we got into the Champagne Lounge, and like I was like, oh my, this was the first time I was ever drunk. You know, I drank two glasses of champagne in one sitting, thinking I don't feel anything, and then I stood up, and the whole room just like shifted into place.
Sure. I turned my head. God.
But sorry, I'm digressing. But anyway,
I want to know everything.
And then the next day or the next week or something, whatever, when we hung out again, we were hanging out in his basement and there was a game show on TV. I think it was Jeopardy or something. And we're sitting on the couch and he starts to kiss me. And he was kissing all around. He like licked all around my mouth. It was like
he licked your whole face.
It was like a whole face kiss all over. And you know, sweet boy. I mean, we didn't know what we were doing, but I definitely was like, I think whatever we're doing, this isn't it.
Tell us his name later. Cause I need to Google this person.
Okay. I'll tell you later. Yes. I'll tell you. No, I wouldn't couldn't tell. But I just remember now looking back at that, I'm going, just gosh, it was so awkward. You know, you don't know what you're doing. You're just trying. Like, is this what we do? We just mash our faces together. I don't know. You know, so sweet.
I remember, like, I was a very late bloomer and I didn't start kissing till very late in the game. And then once I did, right, like senior year, summer after senior year, I remember it being like a great thrill to teach boys who hadn't kissed anyone really how to do it. Like that was like a thing where I was like, I am going to educate some boys so that we go off into the world and make it a happier, gentler place.
Amazing.
Yeah. I loved being like, let's slow this down. Come on. Bring it in. Gently.
Wow.
Gently.
You've done your duty to First Society.
That's it. I'm done. I put my time in. Congratulations, girls.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. No, I mean, I feel like I learned to kiss from a good kisser. I mean, that's a nice thing to be able to look back and say. I think some of the kissing on this show was not my finest work because I was so scared that there's like a camera right there. You
it's
know,
so
like
uncomfortable. So weird.
And it's like these first season kisses were my first time ever doing that, like without actually kissing. It's like a fake kiss, you know? So you're, yeah, there's no tongue and your natural like muscle memory is to like kiss with tongue because that's what you've been doing. And so in this
so
world,
weird.
It's like
so
guppies,
weird.
Man. You're like just guppies, like, blah, 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 blah. You know? It was so gross and weird.
I was doing a pilot. I played Paul Sorvino's daughter in a pilot when I was 14.
Wow. Cool.
And it was called Burning Down the House or something before the movie with Steve Martin came out. My character, Paul Sorvino, had three daughters. And my character had to make out with a boy on the couch for like a whole scene while someone else is talking, you know, so that
no.
It's a sitcom. So the other person's talking and they keep looking back at us and we're just like still, you know, mashing each other's snogging. So
you were 14?
I was 14. I might've been 15, but it was, I mean, I was young and I was supposed to play this teenager and the girl, Gina, oh gosh, I can't remember her last name, but she was so lovely and she played my older sister. And I remember just sitting down with her because we had done the blocking rehearsal, but you don't really kiss in blocking rehearsal. You're not supposed to kiss in blocking rehearsal.
You're not
just
supposed
sort of like,
to.
You're not supposed to. And you just sort of like lean in and like, you know, we're here.
You like put your faces side by side.
Exactly. Thank you.
Do a little cheek touch.
Cheek to cheek. But I sat down next to her. I went to her dressing room. I remember knocking on her door and being like, I've never done an on-camera kiss before. What am I supposed to do? I don't know what we're supposed to do. And Gina was so sweet. I'm going to look up her last name. I don't know why it's escaping me. It's my bad memory. But she was like, oh, no problem. She sat me down and she just walked me through all of it. You know, it's kind of like you want to open your mouth and just press it up against each other. And you sort of like catch each other's lips a little bit, but you don't want to put your tongue in each other's mouth. So it just, you want to make it look like you're French kissing, but you're not actually. She was really sweet. So that's what I learned to do.
Listen, we all have to learn from somebody. It is an awkward thing to watch back in retrospect.
It's so uncomfortable. I will say nothing gives me a greater giggle than when the three of us are on these Zooms together and kissing scenes come up for any of us. And we're all just like cringing and covering our faces with our hands. Like we're so horrified. And I don't know. I find it funny.
Hill, she did a movie with Jeff. It was like some horror movie in a cabin with Eric Palladino. And I'm pretty sure Jeff was in it.
Well, then I'm pretty sure Jeff kissed her too. Cause
guys, we have some listener questions, and I really feel like I need to ask Samantha's question to the group because it's about this. Oh. She says, how do you separate acting feelings from real ones? For example, with Nathan and Haley, the chemistry and love you feel coming from you throughout the whole show is crazy. Did it ever get confusing in real life? I'm going to go ahead and tack on a reference to earlier in the show when we were talking about the palpable chemistry between Deb Scott and Keith Scott. Barbara and Craig have such good chemistry.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think this is actually really a good question. So Joy, take it away.
Gina Phillips, by the way. Gina Phillips. Okay, so, I mean, that's why locationships start.
Locationships? Yeah. That's a word?
Yeah.
Shut up.
It's like the most common, I mean, look at all of our favorite people on all of our favorite shows and in some of our favorite films have all dated each other. I mean, I loved, oh my God, Rachel McAdams and Ryan Gosling when they were together.
Yeah, that was wish fulfillment.
Remember when they kissed on stage at the MTV Awards and we all were like, The Notebook is real.
It's real.
You know, I mean, we've all had our versions of that.
Personally, I feel that the more friction I have with someone off camera, the better it reads on camera.
Oh, yeah.
Look, everyone knows Chad and I in season one were like, you know, two butting heads. We didn't necessarily agree on anything. And we grew to get along. But in season one, because our characters were so being thrust together and I was aware of the want for it to be real. Like, people want to think it's real. And so I was overcompensating for that. And so I'd be real shitty with Chad all the time.
I guess, you know, for Samantha and so many other people, our job is to create this real world, this real chemistry. And I think, you know, sometimes it turns into something that's actually real in real life. Again, I will never get over Rachel McAdams and Ryan Gosling kissing at the MTV Awards.
So
no,
cute.
I won't. I loved it. I was a Notebook fan. I loved that relationship. And, you know, obviously not attached to it. It's no longer a thing. But I do think it is funny, man, to know sometimes people who have amazing on-screen chemistry who actually hated each other.
Oh, yeah.
Or vice versa. I've seen people, I don't know if you guys have ever seen this, I've seen real life couples try to act together and their chemistry on screen is so flat.
Yeah.
And I think nothing is funnier because in life, I'm like, no, you guys are cute. But when there's a camera, you get really awkward and you lose it.
That's
when Jeff
so
and I
funny.
Just did the Here's Negan episode for The Walking Dead, I had nightmares about it. Like,
no.
I would like wake up in the middle of the night in the weeks leading up to shooting that. And I was like, oh my God, what if it goes wrong? Like, what if it's bad? And instead we had the best time ever. And it was like super fun. But boy, I'm going to tell you, like leading up to it. And he also had like, you know, been excited about it publicly. Like, oh, my wife's coming to work to play. And like, then I think it dawned on him like, oh no. What if this is bad? We've never done it before. And so now, to Samantha's point, it feels really nice to work with someone who there's like not a boundary. You know what I mean? Like you can be as like whatever as you want to be. And so like being able to really kiss your spouse when you're supposed to be in a kissing scene is like, man, we're getting away with something.
That's
this is
fun.
Cool.
It's so fun.
Yeah, it snuck up and it was really fun. So yeah, it's a gamble, man. There are some actors out there. Some people can create chemistry with anyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And other people, it doesn't matter how good looking they are.
No.
It's
cannot.
So true. That
there's something about just your own personal, like the things that you're attracted to in other humans, and it's friendship chemistry as well. And you know, you just can't, it's hard to force it.
You know what it is, Joy? You've talked about, it's the listening.
Yeah.
Listening as an actor makes you a better lover and it makes you a better friend on camera. And I think that is the difference. And so in some of these scenes where like we just kind of smash together and there isn't like a dialogue before, like Sophia, you and like, you know, Brooke and Lucas have had some like talks and then a kiss. And then Haley and Nathan have had some talks and then a kiss. And like Paige just like headbutting people really without any kind of conversation. So it feels a little meh. I want to talk about it.
It does get confusing though. I mean, I think especially when you work with somebody that long, I mean, for me with James and I always got on really well, but he was a lot younger than me. And it just didn't really occur to me to have personal romantic feelings for him. But as the show went on and the more time we spent together, I mean, I would totally have like a romantic dream about him and wake up and be like, oh, wow, that was interesting. we're kissing. dating all day. We're like making out and we're like being all lovey-dovey. Of course it's going to work your way into its way, its way into your subconscious. But no, but you know, we never ever got together in real life, and that's honestly probably what kept the chemistry alive on screen for so long too.
Boundaries are important.
They are.
You need that yearning. Sweet. Do we have any other questions we want to hit before we do most likely?
Yeah. Well, let's see. We have Corin asking, when do you think the series concept changed from Ravens to OTH, One Tree Hill, OTH? What was the season promo? Was the season one promo photo shoot awkward? And at what point did you begin to feel like actual friends and not just coworkers? Oh, wow. We have a lot of questions here.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Wow.
Well, it changed. It changed after we shot the pilot, I think.
Yeah, it was just the title. It wasn't the concept. It was just the title.
Yeah, the concept. Well, concept changed a little bit.
Oh, did it?
I mean, it went from being, it was, the way it was pitched, and we've talked about this, was it was supposed to be like 8 Mile with like the boy from the wrong side of the tracks. Supposed to be like, you know, very gritty drama kind of thing. All the sexy stuff came in as a direct result of the summer launch of the OC. Because it was a smash hit. I mean, it was everywhere.
Everywhere.
And so we were told, okay, we'll match that. But by the way, I don't know that that's a bad thing, because all of a sudden the female characters got a much bigger piece of the pie and, you know, screen time and stuff like that. So great. Give me more. I'll take it.
Yeah. Season one promo shoot, photo shoot. Oh, the one where we were laying on each other.
Yeah. I was like, is that when they put us in the bed?
Yeah. It was on set. We filmed that, or we shot that on a stage. Photo shoots are always awkward. At that age, it was always awkward because we were all just, we wanted to look great, and we were all sort of, you know, all this sort of pitting us against each other was happening, plus just the natural sense of insecurity and jealousy that I think a lot of women feel with, young girls feel with each other. And we're in an environment where we were always being compared to each other. And so I think photo shoots definitely got weird in the beginning. I think we eased up after a while, but yeah, it was a little weird. Plus laying everybody on top of each other and being like,
who were we ripping off with that photo shoot? Like, there was another show that
Friends.
Okay.
Friends had done like the cover of Rolling Stone or something, all of them in a bed. And so we did it. And then Gossip Girl did it after us. Like, everyone has done
that
cover.
Every show has done that cover.
It's so funny. And my actual favorite part of season one was that then, to kind of tease us, all the grown-ups did it. So
yeah,
Moira,
so great.
And Barbara and Paul and Barry and Craig. Oh,
it was genius.
Yeah,
so
it was
good.
So smart.
So they copied it. And so then there were two posters.
We need to post those. We need to put that on our social media, because it was genius.
And Craig Sheffer wore a tank top. And it was, I just loved it. They were so funny about it.
It was so great.
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember the photo shoot itself being weird. What I remember is it was the first time I'd been airbrushed. You know, when I worked at MTV and they did like VJ photos, they didn't, you know, make us look different than we did, you know?
Yeah.
We looked like we did on TV. But in this photo shoot, you know, we get the pictures back and like my boobs are way bigger.
Whoa, yes.
Me too. Because Joy, you had on a t-shirt and Hillary and I were both in tank tops. And we were like, whose boobs are these?
Beats the heck out of me, man. I've been in A-cup my whole life. That was weird. And then also, I didn't realize in the editing process, you know, if you're taking a group photo and somebody else looks really good and you are making a dumb face, they'll just take your face from a different picture and smack it on there. And so there's one picture of Chad and I sitting on like Lucas's steps where my head is clearly not attached to my body.
Oh my gosh.
I remember being like so personally upset about it. And the note, you know, from all the powers that be are like, honey, nobody cares. And it was so like, oh, I get it. I'm a thing that we just sell now. Like, this is like a Sears catalog, you know, buy it, don't buy it. No one cares. That was the editing process of when your body becomes a thing to buy and sell and like a brand thing. Ugh. That was a weird concept.
It was also so weird to me that, because there's a thing we get to do where you get the images and you have what they call them kills. You have a certain number of kills you can make.
That's right.
And when you're young, they give you barely any. But you can say, like, I really hate this picture of me. Please don't use it. But what was always so strange to me was that we couldn't say what our favorite pictures were.
Oh, yeah.
We couldn't say, I feel my best in this. Please use one of these 10 images that I like. They just are like, no, we pick we pick you. We sell you. We own your image. We do with your face what we want. And I still find it really weird. But it was certainly weird then.
Dude, I look like I just farted in every promo picture we have. Because I've always got this look on my face like, huh?
Yeah, I hated our promo pictures. Always pretty. The way I looked was so awkward.
Oh,
there's one
God.
Of me out there that I see floating around all the time. And I look so sort of angular and mannish. And like, it's too much makeup. There's like a little bit of a... I don't know. It's just, this doesn't work. It always bothers me. That photo. I'll find
it. I know,
and
there's nothing we can do about him.
There's nothing we can do, but you know what? There's lots of bigger fish to fry in the world. So.
Exactly. It's a champagne problem, I suppose.
Our fans actually make better art for us. Like
they do
a great job of putting us in our best light. So thank you
so
much.
And by the way, we've been loving your Drama Queens artwork, everybody.
Yes.
It's so fun to see that. And please keep sending us emails. Let us know what you're enjoying about the show, what you want to hear more of. And thank you so much for joining us.
Should we display some fan art for our live event?
Oh yeah,
that's a great
day?
Idea.
Oh yeah,
you guys get it in. We're also excited because we're gonna be together in real life for OTH Day. So I can't wait to squeeze you guys.
Tickets
are on sale. So y'all come hang out with us. We love you.
Come hang, sing along with Gavin DeGraw
and some special guests.
Woo!
Hey, let's spin a wheel before we go.
Yeah, I was going to say, now we know that we're all most likely to hate our press photos, but let's see what else we might be.
Okay.
Ding, 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 ding.
Ooh.
Oh, we know this one.
Most likely to win a Grammy.
Joy.
Yes, most likely to win a Grammy is none other. Then Haley James Scott, Bethany Joy.
Right, that's right.
Yes, girl.
Girl, let's do that.
Yeah,
like,
let's do
how
it.
Do we do that? I mean, honestly, we know it's like a game. We know there's like record labels that like take people out to lunch and stuff like that. Like, I'll buy whoever lunch for you to win a Grammy. I'm into it.
I'm in. I'm so in. Well, okay. I just had a meeting with a record label last week, actually, to talk about doing a country record and just... Yeah, there's some things brewing. There's some things brewing with music.
I've got a tambourine if you need some backup.
Yes, I do.
Say the word. Sweet. Well, you guys, this episode was traumatic across the board. I'm glad we went through it together.
Well, next week is episode 13, Hanging by a Moment. Hanging by a Moment.
Yes.
There's that Grammy.
Hey, baby. February 10th, 2004, on their way to drive Karen home from the airport. Karen's back. Keith and Lucas collide with an oncoming vehicle. More crashes, leaving Lucas unconscious and fighting for his life. Drama, drama, drama.
Drama queens.
Okay, guys.
Bye. We'll see you next week.
Hey, thanks for listening.
Don't forget to leave us a review. You can also follow us on Instagram at DramaQueensOTH.
Or email us at DramaQueens@iHeartRadio.com.
See you next time.
We're all about that high school drama girl, all about them high school queens. We'll take you for a ride in our comic girl,
drama girl,
cheering for the right team.
Drama queens, drama queens,
smart girl, rough girl, fashion, but you're tough girl. You could sit with us, girl.
Drama queens, drama queens, drama queens, drama queens, drama queens.